Testing.
So we'll just talk, and then out of this, you can, it sounds like the plan is to take notes and write a paper.
I just have to write a paper. Do you mind if I quote you in the paper?
Oh, no, not at all. No, not at all. I graduated in 71, and I was only gone 2 years. I went out to Gresham High School, and thinking that Pacific was in my rearview mirror forever.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, within 2 years, I got hired back here, and I was married at the time, and it was a really hard decision to leave Gresham because I joined a bunch of younger coaches at Gresham High School, and we had about 2,300 kids who were one of the biggest high schools in the state, and we had, and their athletics is pretty good, and it was a whole group of younger coaches, so there was a lot of social aspects to it too. I was married, but I didn't have any kids, so when I came back to Forest Grove, it really was a huge backward step in the social part of it. But then I felt like being at the college level would further my goals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wanted to be a big-time football coach.
Yeah.
It's really what I wanted to be. So when I hired at Pacific, I was hired to teach the exercise science classes, quite a number of the activity classes like tennis, archery. I taught archery, handball, racquetball, volleyball, and I was the assistant football.
That's what I noticed. Like when I read an article, it said that you were hired as an assistant football coach. Because one time you even couldn't go to the cross country nationals because you had to stay in coach.
That year that we won the national meet, or the district meet, cross country, I didn't see one meet.
Oh, really?
And you know what's really interesting about that year is it because see, we never hosted a cross country meet because I was busy on Saturdays.
Yeah.
I was the defensive coordinator.
Oh, okay.
And the offensive line coach, so I was the number one assistant in football. And that's really what I was hired for. The track was, oh, and by the way, did we mention, you know, we're not sure if we mentioned it in the interview process, but you're also going to be the head boys track coach. I mean, it was literally, that was the pecking order.
Really?
They want you as a teacher and as a football coach, and then you're not only going to be head track coach, but you're also going to coordinate the cross country team, which means you're going to have a cross country team, you know, kind of work with the kids that show up, and we'll see if we can find somebody else to supervise them on Saturdays when you have the meets. Well, that was really the mentality of the hire, but little did they know that I took the cross country and the track thing really personally, because you know those programs had my name on it.
Yeah.
Whereas the football, I was an assistant. Now later I was actually offered the head football job.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason that I declined it was it was the offer was made with no additional salary but just some release time from teaching. So conceivably I could have been head football, head cross country, and head track. And still, I would have been a teacher, and I just didn't see that happen, because if you're going to be really competitive, you know, you got to recruit. And the only way we got to where we were in track was through a lot of recruiting.
Really?
And we had no facilities. Now, when I say that, we had the field house. Now, the field house wasn't tarp in those days. It started off being dirt.
Oh, really?
And then we bought the used AstroTurf from Parker Stadium in Corvallis. And we put that AstroTurf down in the field house. We laid it right on the dirt.
Oh, okay.
If we had a lot of activity in there, it would still get kind of dusty, but it was a lot better than it was when it was just dirt.
Really?
Yeah, it was the AstroTurf held the dust down.
Yeah.
But if we had a football practice in there, we had, you know, 50 guys running back and forth, you can see the dirt, you know, come yeah. through the carpet and up in the air.
Why would you guys practice in there?
Well, if the weather was crappy outside or something,
yeah.
we would. And usually it would be maybe a Friday practice before a Saturday game. Where yeah. we were just running through things, so yeah. we weren't
full contact
and that type of thing. But then in track, what we're able to do is actually have indoor meets.
That's what I noticed too.
Yeah, I cut the carpet for the pole vault, and I just went ahead on my own and cut it. That was great. And it's like, what? You what? I said, well, how were we going to pole vault if we couldn't cut the carpet? Because you had to put the box in.
How was the department? Were they behind doing indoor meets? Did they want to do them? Or?
Well, we had a longtime venerable baseball coach in Chuck Lefero, and I was definitely, having been a student here, his attitude was, well, you can have your kids come in when we're done. You know, it was a sort of a pecking order.
That's the same way it is today still.
Yeah. Well, in other words, we're going to be practicing Monday through Friday from 3 to 5. And, gee, you can use it any other time. Well, hello? No, that's not what we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to be doing. You can have it every other day from 3 to 5. I can have it every other day from 3 to 5. And, but then we had girls softball, so we had to integrate. So instead of him, but you know, the guy had been there for forever and had some pretty good teams in the past. And I think it's natural that he felt like, you know, he sort of had priority over it. And in track, in 1973, when I was hired, I wasn't able to do any recruiting, so we had about 10 kids, and I was just boys track. There, as I think back, there actually was a girls track team. It was a joke,
probably,
but there was a team. So if a girl said, you know, I want to do track, do you have a program? Technically, the answer was yes, we do.
No,
but Miranda French was the coach, and she had four or five girls, maybe four or five. She didn't do any recruiting. So it was one of those things where when it got to be February, you put up a little sign that says, if you're interested in girls track, you know, meet in the pack, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that was what was kind of expected out of me in track was we want, in cross country, we want the kids that want to run to get to the meets. So schedule some meets and figure out a way to get them there. And then in track, you know, watch, I have 10 kids that first year, watch them work out, make sure they keep their nose clean. The expectations were really low. It was, to stay in the Northwest Conference, you had to offer so many sports. So the track program was primarily in name only, to say that we were in compliance with the Northwest Conference regulations.
So they'd never had a competitive program?
No, there was a mile relay team that placed in the national meet back in the early 60s. If you do the research, Dan French was the coach then, and he took a relay team to the NAIA national meet, and they placed. And then I think there was a pole vaulter back in 1908 or something that was actually in the Olympic Games.
And,
so, you know, there's a there's a little here and a little there from the past, but up to 1973 or 74, there wasn't a team concept. And I since it had my name on it, I put a lot of energy into it because it was something that I was in charge of. So I didn't have the girls, and I had 10 boys. And we, of course, you know, we got our butt kicked in every dual meet. But I had a high hurdler that was my salvation, John Boyd.
Yeah, I read about him.
14-3. So what was great about it is that it got me through that first year. Of course, when I went to the conference meet or went to the district meet, we had one event where we had the number one seed, and they couldn't touch him. And he was a kid that was recruited 4 years earlier we were students there together. So I was only gone 2 years. So when I got hired back, you know, John was a senior.
What was he recruited for?
Well, he was a kid out of Carson, California, was a music major, and was recruited for football.
So he played
football. He was a tall, kind of gangly black kid, real nice kid, just real nice kid. How he ended up getting to Pacific, that was a windfall for me, because John could run the highs.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, you got to have at least one. Your first year, you got to have one stud, because otherwise it's really discouraging.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there at this coaches meeting, and I'm hearing, you know, Eldon Fix from Lewis and Clark, and Chuck Bowles from Willamette, Paul Hosted from PLU, and Rich Allen from Coach Fox, and they're yakking about this kid and that kid, where they could be seated, and so on and so forth. And I'm just waiting for the high hurdles. You know, because it was the event, man.
Yeah.
And John was clean up. It was great. So that got me through it. Yeah. But I was determined that I wasn't going to be sitting there in the coaches' meetings after that without some cards to play.
Yeah.
And that meant that I had to get on the phone and sent out questionnaires to coaches, Oregon high school coaches, and junior college coaches. I hit all the junior colleges on the whole West Coast, Camp Community, Green River. I got kids from California. I found out that there's a lot of kids, not so many high school kids, but the easy pickings were the JC kids. And that second year, I had a distance runner by the name of Ron Vogt, the OGT.
Yeah, I read about him too.
And he was a stud. I got him from John Hancock Community College in California. So I got Ron that second year, and some other recruits, and had a decent year recruiting. But Ron was a guy that was really connected to distant runners, and he helped me. And see, that was in 75, and in 76 we won the district cross country championships and broke the record. Yeah, we scored 29 points in the district meet. But see, Ron was a senior that year, but I give him the credit because the year before, when he came to Pacific, he and I recruited together, and he was really in the Lompoc, California area, trust, you know. So lo and behold, I get Roger Hanson from Colorado, you know, University of Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, guy's a big time runner.
Yeah.
He ran a 30 flat 10K at Delta Park in a road run.
Why did he want to come to Pacific?
Well, he was tired of Colorado, and his buddy Ron Vogt was at Pacific. So I get a transfer from Litchfield. I get a steeplechaser, you know, an 853 steeplechaser from Litchfield. All of a sudden, Pacific is the place to be. Now, we didn't have a track, but we got creative. We practiced over at Tom McCall.
Oh, okay.
Which is hardly a track at all anymore, but it wasn't bad. We actually had some home track meets at Airfield in Hillsboro, but we didn't have very many home meets. We had no home cross country meets at all, because I wasn't available. But we used the field house, and four-stroke had a real good coach, real good. Larry Binker was at four-stroke, and Larry and I really hit it off. So we ran our program together. He would work with our hurdlers. I would work with the throwers. We sort of integrated the program, and with a lot of success. And then I kept recruiting for 4 years. That's the real hard part, is recruiting. I got a 60-foot high school shot putter, who holds the school record in the javelin, by the way. That's Greg Harris.
What are you throwing the javelin?
217. When you take a look at the record board, you already picked up on this.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at, and you know, the record board isn't really 100% accurate, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Pat McKeith, 149.5.
Yeah, I saw that, too.
Dave Neese ran 352 or something. That was his sophomore year. That's a kid from Perrydale, Oregon. I can explain where Perrydale is, but it's a school of about seven. And I got this kid was amazing. He came to Pacific with a 212 800 time.
Yeah.
And it was a friend of mine that was his high school track coach, and he said, you know, this kid, pretty nice kid, and he said, you know, he's not much of an athlete, but would you put him in your program? I said, sure. So the kid came up here, and he ran cross country, and we went down the Linfield, and the icebreaker opened. And so this kid's got a 212, and he takes off, runs through the first lap, about 59, and he's running in the slow heat.
Yeah.
You know, the icebreaker open, they got.
So he's way out in front?
Yeah, so he's way out in front.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, man, the monkey's waiting. he's gonna get to about, I don't know, I think we're running yards in those days. So he's gonna get to about the 660.
Yeah.
And the monkey is down there warming up. Right? So he just keeps running, so he gets to about where, you know, he's got about a half a lap left to go, and looking at him, and of course he's way the hell ahead, because he's running in the slow heat, right? The guy looks pretty good, but he'll never make it the last 100 meters. The guy just comes in, runs 156 on.
Jeez.
That's a freshman, this kid.
That's phenomenal.
So I had three kids that ran under 155.
Dang.
And McKeith is 149. Probably never be broken. I mean, you know, they never say never, but that's a stud.
Jeez,
man. NAIA National Meet with that time.
Really?
Yeah, it got beat by Mike Coy from Eastern New Mexico, who happened to hold the world record in the 800 at that time. He was in the finals.
Dang.
So we knew Mike was going to win. It was going to be 146 or whatever, but Keith got fourth. Just blew me away. Jason got fifth in the steeplechase that year. I think he ran 853 or 852 or something. And what's really funny about Kaysen was, you know, he's this linebacker guy.
Yeah.
Great big white guy. About 6'1", about 210, and he's running against all these Kenyans. And these Kenyans have knives that are about this big around.
Yeah.
And they're going in and out of the water, and they're going over those barriers. And this Kasich kid was just one tough kid.
Yeah.
And he should have probably been playing football. In fact, his brother played football and was a javelin thrower for us. This is a kid that transferred from Israel.
Yeah.
He was just tough. And he had a knack for this race. See, when I ran Nice and Kasich, both of the steeplechase and the conference meet, they went 1-2.
Really?
Yeah, and it was run the first day up at PLU. So we started off with 18 points in the first event.
Yeah.
It's a steeplechase. Ron Vogt ended up with the marathon record, which has since been broken. He ran 2:40. Somebody ran 2:38. When Scott Wall was here,
yeah,
he had a kid that ran 2:38, which is still the record. But Vogt had the record at 2:40. Ron was helping recruit and was responsible for a lot of these kids coming here. But Ron, you know, Ron was a funny kid. He didn't like track.
Really?
He loved cross country, and he was tough as nails.
Yeah.
He was one of our best cross-country runners, but he was never a track runner.
Why not?
He didn't like running around in circles.
Really?
Yeah. Good road racer.
Yeah.
And ran a good marathon. You know, 2:40 is right at 6 minutes a mile.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
impressive.
Yeah, it is. It was a good
really
time. It was, it probably ended up being one of the softer records on the board, but still a good solid record. The intermediate hurdle record, and I'm not taking it away from Lucas, but see, Boyd ran that his sophomore year, and that Lucas broke.
Yeah.
Was John Boyd's intermediate. And when I got hired back to Pacific, I told John, I said, look, you know, you don't really want to run the intermediates, do you? And he said, nope. I said, well, I'll tell you what, you just work on the highs. And I never ran it in the intermediates. So that record that's on the board, that was on the board
from the sophomore,
was from a sophomore year. Yeah. And his heart wasn't in it. And
yeah.
It was a high hurdler.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where he just dreaded the intermediates.
Totally different race.
Just dreaded it.
Yeah.
And I didn't make him run it. Could he have lowered the record? Probably. Interestingly enough, though, he ran on the mile relay team. And,
oh, really?
And would run a good strong leg. Yeah. He could run 55.
No kidding.
You know, yeah. Well, when you start the intermediates in 54.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could run 55.
Yeah.
Okay, so,
what about 4x1? Did he run 4x1?
Well, see, by the time we got all those sprinters, John was gone. Craig Singer, Bill Penny, Mark Burt, you know. And Mark Burt had the...
Mark Burt, he's in the Hall of Fame.
He had the decathlon record for about 20 years. Kid was best athlete I coached. Ron Burt was Mark Burt.
No kidding.
Yeah. See, when I got him from Lane Community College, he had never done a decathlon. So, in his entire career at Pacific, he only did three.
Jeez.
And he scored 71.54, and that was a district record for 20 years until Western Oregon recruited a guy from Turkey who was an Olympian and scored 8,000 points a few years ago. But Mark had the record for about 20 years. But, you know, Mark ran, he ran 10.6.
I know.
21-1. 48-8. He ran 48-8 in the decathlon. In lane 8. National meet with a sprained ankle. I sprained his ankle in the high jump. And I said, you want to withdraw? And he said, no, I want to stay in it.
Dang.
And he ran 48-8 out in lane 8.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. It's the most amazing thing I've seen.
He jumped like 23-10 or something too, didn't he?
He held the long jump record. He high jumped 6.5.
That's 20, unbelievable.
23. He threw the jab. You know, he was about 180-foot javelin thrower. He wasn't very good at the shot and the discus, although it wasn't bad. But you know, the two events where he could have picked up serious points had we been able to really work with him, but keep it moving, you know? We had 40 kids on the team, and we didn't have assistants. Now, from year to year, I would have maybe a bad assistant, somebody that would be come back for the fifth year and help me or something. But basically, you know, I was over the whole program.
Yeah.
Where Mark could have really gone, because I sat down one day and I figured out, I took his test and I said, okay, the kid can't pole vault. He's not bending the pole. He's using the fiberglass pole like a metal pole.
Yeah.
But with this speed, I mean, can you imagine? And in the highs. We never had the opportunity to work on the highs. The only time he ever ran the highs was three times, and that was in those decathlons. Kid could have run 14 something in the highs.
Yeah.
He could have vaulted probably 15 feet.
Yeah.
He scored 71.54 with a 12-foot vault and a 16 something in the highs.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That kid, I had him up to 7,800. No problem. I just said, okay. You know, I sat down and I said, first of all, let's just take his marks in the 100, in the 400, and the high jump, and the long jump. Okay, so those are four events that he's done that we actually have marks. Let's just take his marks. And then let's take the other events, and let's not go crazy. Let's just figure out, you know, a reasonable time in the 1500.
Yeah.
For a guy that can run, you know, a 48-second 400. And let's just, in the highs, you know, let's go with, let's say, 15 flat. For a guy that can run the 100 meters, come on, 15 flat ain't that fast.
Yeah.
And let's say he learns to bend the pole. Let's give him just 14 feet in the pole vault. Now to come up with 78 something, you know, but it's hypothetical because he never did another decathlon after he left the city. But the biggest surprise was when I took Makita in the 800. See, he wasn't even district champion. He let a kid from Northwest Nazarene beat him. And he was at Lewis and Clark, and Pat was prison, and he knew he was going to run 153, you know, something like that. But he's cruising along, not being careful, and this kid from Northwest Nazarene runs him down and beats him at the tape. Okay, so now I got a problem, because if the district champion was an automatic
in the nationals. Oh.
The way our district was set up was you're the district champion.
Really?
You automatically went. Yeah, unless it was up to the schools, but unless you weren't competitive.
Yeah.
Like let's say, but our district was strong enough that if you were the district champion, your chances are you belonged at the national meet, particularly like in the javelin. And, I mean, our district dominated the javelin. Yeah, we had a great javelin course. But the problem that McKeithen presented me with was, yeah, he was the Northwest Conference champion, but he wasn't the district champion, and he had only run, you know, 153 or something. So I looked at the list, and it only went to, you know, like 152 or something, like the top 12.
Yeah.
So I interpolated, and I went to the athletic director, and I said, you know, I'd like to take McKeith. He's a senior, and the first thing that got said was, well, but he wasn't district champion. I said, yeah, I know that. I said, that was a screw-up.
Yeah.
I mean, he was complacent. He just screwed up. And I said, yeah, but I said, but he's competitive. Well, how competitive is he? I said, well, all I got is, you know, like the top 12 times. Well, is he in those? Well, not exactly. So I said, look, I don't know if I'm owed anything here, but if I am, if I got any favors out there in Karma Land or wherever, I said, I want to use it. I said, you know, the kid as a senior. He came to Pacific, he was here all 4 years. He worked hard. He was difficult. He was not an easy kid to work with.
Right.
And he'll tell you that today. I've talked to him
in
the last month. And now his recollection is you know, that somehow I was the reason for his success, but actually had Patrick was a student of the game, and he came to me and said, you know, these are the kinds of workouts that I want to do. I said, I want to do it with your blessing. And I said, you got my blessing, and let me know what I can do to help. And so sometimes I would time his intervals, and sometimes he would just do the workouts on his own. See, his senior year, we were so strong in cross country, he wasn't even in the top 7.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he was about 8th or 9th. And Kasem and Hanson were both here, but they transferred, so they weren't even eligible.
Oh, yeah.
And McKeaton was still only 8th or 9th in our cross country. We were that good. Well, 29 in the district. In the district, now this is back when there were 14 or 15 teams in the district.
Yeah.
But anyway, get back to the McKeaton thing. So I got him a ticket. Got him a plane ticket. Arkadelphia, Arkansas. So I get back there. Then there's the coaches meeting, the seating meeting, who's entered, confirm they're here, so on and so forth. You got 33 guys entered in the 800 confirmed.